Shalom, welcome to the Jewish Task Force, JTF. My name is Chaim Ben Pesach. This program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, complete recovery for Sharon Katz, and to elevating the souls of Simcha Bat Rachel Pesach Zev Ben Chava, Harav Mir Kahana, Yosef Ben Meir, Bari Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Robert Mittman, and Sipora Fegi Bat Liba. We have two subjects that we want to discuss on this week's program. The first is why Donald Trump is so bad for Israel, precisely because he's now so popular among Orthodox Jews and among the Jews that are pro-Israel, and his policies are so damaging at the same time. Precisely because of that, he is so harmful to Israel, and we're going to explain how that works. And the second thing we want to discuss is this week's parasha, Parashat Vayechi. Vayechi is the parasha where Yaakov Avinu, where Jacob, our father, blesses his 12 sons, the 12 tribes, and where he begs his son Yosef to bury him in Hebron, in the land of Israel. And we're going to explain the significance of that. But first, let's start off with Donald Trump. First, let me say that we have, of course, been very critical of Donald Trump. I think he's a catastrophe for Israel. I think he's a catastrophe for America. And I think his presidency will be a complete failure in the end. But having said that, and I think he will discredit conservatism, republicanism, and just, he's an overall disaster. But having said that, if he does something that we agree with, I'm going to praise what he does. And he did do one thing that deserves praise, and he deserves credit for it. Sholem Rubashkin is a 57-year-old Orthodox Jew who ran a kosher meatpacking house in Iowa, in the state of Iowa. And anti-Semitic federal officials, federal bureaucrats, decided to accuse him of bank fraud and all types of nefarious things, that he supposedly didn't fill out the forms to the banks correctly and didn't fill out federal forms correctly. So they charged him with all these federal counts, and they gave him a 27-year prison term. And by the way, there is no parole in the federal prison system. Parole was ended in 1987. There has been no parole. So you do at least 85% of your sentence. So he would have had to have done at least a quarter of a century in prison. He would have had to have done at least 25 years in prison. He had a 27-year prison term. And for what? For supposedly not filling out his forms properly? And incidentally, the case was so dirty. You had over 100 former Department of Justice officials who usually never intervene when their fellow Justice Department officials prosecute a case. U.S. attorneys, prosecutors, veteran Justice Department officials signing a letter to President Trump saying this was a complete miscarriage of justice, that he should never have been tried, convicted, that the whole thing is outrageous. 30 members of Congress intervened on his behalf. I mean, it stinks to the high heavens. This was an anti-Semitic case, just like the Jonathan Pollard case was an anti-Semitic case, where they gave Jonathan Pollard a sentence of life without parole, in effect, and he wound up serving over 30 years in prison for doing something that benefited the United States and benefited Israel. But in any event, once again, we see the anti-Semitic system at work here, because the people who run the system very often are anti-Semites, and they will use the system to target Jews. And this Jew was a target. And so for a white-collar offense of supposedly not filling out the bank forms properly, he was given a 27-year federal prison sentence, where he would have to serve virtually the whole sentence. 27 years in prison. He's been locked up since 2008. For 9 years, he's been in prison already. 9 years he's sitting in prison already, and he would have been in prison again for a quarter of a century under these crazy, obscene charges. That's more time than most murderers and rapists get. I mean, just pure anti-Semitism. This is a father of 10 children. He is a family man. He, a completely law-abiding citizen, of course, had no criminal record whatsoever. I mean, the whole thing is just, it just stinks to the high heavens. A completely anti-Semitic case. President Trump commuted his sentence this past week, and President Trump deserves to be praised for commuting his sentence. He deserves credit for that. That is in Donald Trump's favor, the fact that he commuted his sentence. It was a miscarriage of justice, and President Trump used his presidential power to commute his sentence. Unfortunately, President Trump left in place the heavy fines that were exacted against him, and a very severe special parole system where he has to be reporting, and where he could easily be thrown back in prison if the federal officers claim that he's violating their conditions. I mean, that shouldn't have happened. He should have been given a complete pardon, really. But still, he's being let out of prison, and for that, President Trump deserves to be praised. And that, of course, is making the Orthodox Jews who are familiar with the case again, Donald Trump now is like the Mashiach. He's like the Messiah to them after the Jerusalem announcement and this. You know, Jews are so pathetic. The Jews of our generation are so pathetic. A people so brilliant in science, in art, in literature, in medicine, in research, in philosophy, you name it. They are such a brilliant people, no one can come close to them in terms of their accomplishments, in terms of their ability to achieve things and change the world and influence events. Nobody can do it like the Jews. A tiny people that literally moves the world. It's incredible. And with all their brilliance in all these areas, when it comes to their own survival, they are so incredibly stupid. They are so anxious to win over the love of the Goyim. The Goyim are the Gentiles, the nations of the world. They're so anxious to win over the love of the Goyim, to be accepted. They're so afraid of being isolated, even though they are isolated. Whether they like it or not, they're hated, and they are isolated. And they don't want to face that. But they are so afraid to accept their destiny, to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation, nation of priests. And lo, this is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. That's a blessing for the Jews, but they don't want that blessing. It's pathetic. They will grab onto any straw. They will grab onto anything to convince themselves, ooh, there's a guy in the White House that likes us, the president, and he likes us, and now, ooh, we'll... I mean, this is so pathetic. Donald Trump and his policies on Israel are a catastrophe. On the one hand, he announces that he's preparing to move the U.S. Embassy to West Jerusalem and recognizes West Jerusalem as Israel's capital, which, again, is not good for Israel, because West Jerusalem was never in dispute here. It's East Jerusalem that's in dispute. That's the real Jerusalem. Real Jerusalem is where the Western Wall is. The real Jerusalem is where Har HaBayit is, where the Temple Mount is. That's the real Jerusalem. And that Jerusalem, he has made it clear he is not recognizing and is not accepting, and says that has to be a subject of negotiations, which means he wants Israel to give that up and surrender that. But beyond that, he makes some announcement which does absolutely nothing for Israel. I mean, he makes an announcement that does absolutely nothing to help Israel. Nothing. Except make stupid Jews feel, oh, how wonderful, oh, now we're okay, now we're in, because the president said he recognizes Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Big deal. This does nothing for Israel's security, does nothing for Israel. The only thing that would protect Jerusalem would be moving more Jews into Jerusalem, more Jews on the ground. That would strengthen Israel's position in a meaningful way. And at the same time that he's issuing the Jerusalem Declaration, he openly, in front of the whole world, is pressuring Israel not to allow Jews to move into Jerusalem, because he says it's a subject for negotiations. He doesn't want, he says you have to be, we can't have settlements. And he includes, as so-called settlements, Jews moving into Jerusalem. So on the one hand, the one thing that really is important for Israel, which is Jews moving into Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria, on that, Trump is pressuring Israel as brutally as Barack Hussein Obama or any other anti-Israel president. And on the other hand, he's issuing these declarations which are just a bluff. That's the worst nightmare for the Jewish people. It is the ultimate nightmare. Trump is a catastrophe for Israel and a catastrophe for the Jewish people. I mean, at least with Obama, he was hated in Israel. The Jews in Israel hated Obama. And rightly so, because he was an anti-Semite and a Muslim and wanted to destroy Israel. But at least with Obama, there was resistance to the freeze, and people would speak up against the freeze. With Trump, they're freezing the building, and the Jews are euphoric that they're screwing Israel and screwing the Jews, and the Jews are all euphoric. I mean, this is insanity. This is the worst possible scenario, and Jews don't understand. They don't, and they refuse to. Most Jews will not listen. They're not interested in hearing what we have to say. They're not interested in the facts. They're not interested. They want to believe what they want to believe. And the same thing is true in terms of Trump's policy on Iran. You know, he keeps certifying Iran as complying with the nuclear agreement, even though he says they're not and tweets that they're not, but he certifies in writing that they are, which means they still get the $600 billion in trade benefits and technology benefits from the Western world. So he's giving them all the benefits and then bluffing and issuing statements. So they're on their way to building a nuclear arsenal, God forbid, with nuclear bombs aimed at Israel and aimed at the United States, while Trump is just bluffing. And Russia and Iran are on Israel's northern border. Obama was against the presence of Russia and Iran in Syria, in Iraq, in Lebanon. Russia and Iran now are controlling, in effect, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon on Israel's northern border. This is the ultimate nightmare. Israel always said this is unacceptable. The United States always said this isn't acceptable. Under Obama, under Bush, the United States said they won't accept this, and they warned Russia against this, and they warned Iran against this, and they supported when Israel wanted to strike Iranian positions in Iraq and Syria and Lebanon. The United States did not criticize Israel for doing so. Trump is so in bed with his boss, Vladimir Putin, that he is creating a situation where he's actually helping Russia take over. He's helping them take over these countries, Russia and Iran take over these countries. For instance, he joined the Russians in bombing what he calls ISIS targets, which really weren't ISIS targets. Many of them were just Arabs who were fighting against the Iranians in Syria. He's helping the Russians and the Iranians consolidate their control of Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon. Of course, Putin and the Russian media and the Russian propaganda machine are defending Trump, obviously. They never had it so good. And there's one other thing about Trump, and we're going to sum it all up in a moment, but there's one other thing about Trump. This love affair with Trump now, where Israeli Jews overwhelmingly love him now, they think he's done something wonderful, and they're so anxious to believe this. This is creating the worst possible scenario. We now have Israel mentally and otherwise more dependent upon the U.S. than ever before. The only hope for redemption for Israel and for the world is for Israel to be Am levadad yishkonu vagoyim lo yitchashav. This is a nation that shall dwell alone and not be reckoned among the nations. Only when Israel follows Hashem and is willing to go it alone and ignore American pressure and other pressure, only when that happens can we have redemption. We can never have redemption if we depend on Trump or Washington or any other country. Never. Hashem doesn't want that. He won't accept that. And we have worse dependence than ever on the U.S. now. Under Obama, there was friction. So many Israelis said, look, we've got to become independent. We've got to go a different way, because the United States is not a reliable ally. Look, Obama's an anti-Semite. You have an anti-Semitic president. We've got to go independent. That was at least a healthy line of thinking that was beginning to develop in Israel. Trump killed all of that. Now, complete slavish dependence on the United States. Complete dependence on the U.S., and we can't do anything to offend our wonderful friend Donald Trump. I mean, this is suicidal. This is the worst possible scenario. And so let's sum up why he's terrible, why Trump is terrible. Number one, because he's pressuring Israel not to allow Jews to move into Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, just as Obama did. Except with him, there's even less resistance, because Jews think he's pressuring them to commit suicide, and they think it's good. So, worse than Obama on Jewish settlements, which is the most important issue for keeping the land of Israel and preventing the rise of a so-called Palestinian state, which would be national suicide for Israel. The worst possible scenario is what Trump is doing on Jewish settlements. Worse than Obama. And with Iran, worse than Obama, because the Iranians are on their way to building a nuclear arsenal, and Trump is just bluffing, and that's making Israelis think, oh, wonderful Donald Trump is going to take care of this for us. He's not going to take care of anything. And Russia, and that's number two. So number one, no, on settlements, he's worse. On Iran, he's worse. On Russia and Iran taking over Iraq and Syria and Lebanon on Israel's northern border. Do you know that there are hundreds of thousands of missiles from Muslim terrorists like Hezbollah aimed at Israel's cities? Do you know what, I mean, do you have any idea what this can do to the population of Israel? Hundreds of thousands of missiles are aimed at Israel's cities. And some of these are missiles that are very deadly. And Trump is enabling his Russian friends to do this because he's controlled by Vladimir Putin and Russia, because Vladimir Putin and Russia gave loans to his businesses when they were going bankrupt, and he completely does what he is following their line to the utmost. And so are Russia and Iran taking over all the countries on Israel's northern border, which is very dangerous for Israel, a real threat to Israel's survival. On that issue, he's worse. And the fourth thing is dependence on the U.S. Israel must be independent. That's the only hope for Israel to do what Israel's supposed to do. And for the redemption of Israel and for the redemption of the world, Israel must be independent. So on the issue of settlements, he's worse. Trump is worse. On the issue of Iran, he's worse. On the issue of Russia and Iran taking over Israel's three northern countries of Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon, he's worse. And on the issue of U.S. of dependence on the United States instead of Israeli independence, he's worse. So on these four key critical issues for Israel's survival, he is worse, even worse than Obama, even worse than Obama. Now, he did let this Jew out of prison. I'm very happy he did. I'm very happy for this Jew, Shalom Rubashkin. And I don't believe Obama would have let him out, because Obama was just didn't do that for Jews when Jews were in trouble legally. So on that issue, he deserves credit. But on Israel, which is the really pressing issue for Jewish survival, Israel is where the action is. Israel is where the world's future is going to be decided. Certainly the Jewish future is going to be decided. On that issue, Trump is terrible. He is absolutely catastrophic. Anyway, let me just see where we stand in time. Okay, I know we've taken up a lot of time with this. And I know. You don't think I know that the position I take is unpopular because Jews so desperately want to believe the opposite. They're so anxious to believe that Trump is our friend. They're so anxious to believe this. And no matter what facts you present, they're going to find some reason to want to believe this. So I'm well aware of the fact that we're taking an unpopular position. I'm well aware of the fact. But JTF is not like the other Jewish organizations. We're not whores who take positions based on popularity. We take positions based on what's good for Israel and the Jewish people. We don't take positions based on whether or not it's popular or unpopular. Of course, we want to be popular. We'd love to be popular. We'd want to be the most popular people in the world if we could. But we're not going to sacrifice our principles, and certainly not sacrifice Jewish lives and let the Jews continue to live in a world of illusions just for the sake of popularity. If we have to be unpopular to tell a truth that has to be told, then so be it. We're the only organization that I know of that really does that all the time. Let's go on to this week's parashat. Parashat Vayechi. Yaakov Avinu, Jacob our father, is in the last, this is the last parasha in the book of Bereshit, in the book of Genesis, before we get to Shmot, the second book of the Torah, second book of the Bible. Shmot, I think in English, is Exodus. And before we get to that in this last chapter, Yaakov, before his death, wants to bless his 12 sons, who are the 12 tribes of Israel, who become eventually the 12 tribes of Israel. And Yosef is now the viceroy of Egypt. His son became the viceroy of Egypt. He became the ruler of Egypt. Moshel Mitzrayim. He became like the governor or the ruler of Egypt. And so Yaakov begs him to bury him in Hebron, in the cave of the patriarchs in Hebron. A place, by the way, where Bibi Netanyahu and Trump and all the leaders are not allowing Jews to settle. And I mean, this is such a holy place for the Jewish people. But Yaakov begs Yosef to bury him there. He doesn't want to be buried in Egypt. He wants to be buried in Hebron, in Eretz Yisrael. Look at how important it is to all the great Jews to be in Eretz Yisrael and to be buried in Israel. Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, all three of our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all of them buried in Hebron. They all want to be buried in Hebron. It's so important for them to be in Eretz Yisrael. If it's so important for them to be buried in Eretz Yisrael, how much more so is it important for Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael? You know, we're taught, first of all, the vast majority of the mitzvot can really only be performed in Eretz Yisrael, the mitzvot of the commandments. And we're taught, rabbis say, he who lives outside of Israel, it is as if he has no God. Any Jew living outside of Israel, it's as if he has no God. And he who lives in Israel, it's as if he has a God. In other areas, other sections, we're taught that living outside of Israel is like doing Avodah Zarah, is like doing idolatry. It's idolatrous to live outside of Israel. This was so central, and is so central to Jewish belief. And yet you got Orthodox Jews and Hasidic Jews and others who live, you know, who live in Brooklyn and outside of Israel, and who live in whether it's Borough Park or Kew Gardens or Muncie or any other community outside of Israel. I mean, it's an obscenity to live outside of Eretz Yisrael. It's so easy for Jews to live in Eretz Yisrael today. Moshe Rabbeinu, Moses, when he was told he would not be allowed to enter the land of Israel, he composed 515 special prayers to Hashem. 515 different prayers he composed to Hashem, begging Hashem to allow him to go to the land of Israel, until Hashem ordered him basically to stop praying. And to stop that prayer. Why is it so important for Moshe Rabbeinu, for Avraham, for Yitzchak, for all the great leaders of the Jewish people? Why is living in the land of Israel so key, so central to them, so important to them? And yet, you have American Jews who think that, you know, we don't really have to live in Israel. It's not important. Oh, how wrong. Oh, how wrong. And Israeli Jews who think you can give up parts and surrender parts of the land of Israel. We live in a very, very orphan generation. That's why JTF's message is so important. It's so important that we get out there. You know, I mean, we're doing video, we're doing a new Hebrew video almost every day. And reaching people with a message that nobody else tells them. I mean, we support Moshe Feiglin and the Zehut Party. Moshe Feiglin and the Zehut Party are going to be running for the Knesset. We're supporting Moshe Feiglin and Zehut. And we're becoming more and more of a larger and larger part of the campaign of videos on his behalf on YouTube. We're becoming a bigger and bigger part of that. Even though we're running our campaign independent of him for legal reasons and other reasons, you know, because you can't have an independent campaign coordinating with the official campaign. I'm not sure exactly what Israeli law is. I know in the United States you're not supposed to do that. So I figure in Israel it's probably similar. So we're keeping our distance in terms of us not coordinating with his campaign. And besides, we can do more good when we run our campaign independently. But we're trying to get Moshe Feiglin in the Knesset, but even he can't tell the whole truth to the people of Israel. He can't. If he did, he would be banned. I'm sitting in the United States, unfortunately against my will, but because I'm in the United States, I can say things that in Israel are illegal. I can, in Israel, you're not allowed to insult public officials. It's called insulting public officials. It's a law. It's a felony in Israel. You can get several years in prison for insulting a public official. I mean, that's what they call a democracy in Israel. What a farce. Obviously, I don't have that problem in the United States. I can say anything, and I'm doing it, and I'm reaching a different audience than Moshe Feiglin reaches. Moshe Feiglin, let me explain to you how this is working now. Moshe Feiglin is an intellectual. He's very honest, very courageous, very articulate. He's like an intellectual. And so he reaches a certain audience. He reaches middle-class voters and college-educated voters, people that went to universities and colleges and who work in white-collar jobs and so on. He reaches them, and they're most of the people in his party come from those elements of Israeli society. He generally, because he's an intellectual and because he addresses the issues in an intellectual manner, which very importantly impresses people that we need to impress and we need to convince. But he doesn't reach the lower middle class Sephardic voters in Israel, the working class, lower middle class Sephardic voters as much. I do. I reach them with my videos. They love the way I give it to everybody on my videos. And by the way, my English language videos are mild compared to the Hebrew language videos. And they love it. So I'm reaching an audience and bringing an audience to him that he would have a hard time reaching. Plus, again, he can't say what we can say. We're the only ones that are telling the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to the people of Israel. It's so essential that our message get out there. It's so essential. And we need your help to do it. We need your help to do it. I believe that what we're doing is absolutely, if we weren't doing this, there'd be nobody telling the whole truth to the people of Israel. No one. No one. And so we need help to reach as many people as we can with our message. And the more you help us financially and by spreading the word about our movement and strengthening our movement, the more you help us, the more people we reach. The more Israeli Jews are exposed to the truth that Israel must be independent and that Israel must be self-sufficient, that Israel must move as many Jews as possible into Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria, that Israel must have a program to get the Arabs out of Israel. Even if it involves compensation or whatever, we've got to get the Arab, we've got to move them out. I just did three Hebrew videos in a row on the need to throw the illegal aliens from Africa out of Israel. You know, there are over 70% of South Tel Aviv are now illegal aliens from Africa. I mean, Israel doesn't have enough problems with millions of Arabs living in the land of Israel. Now they have to import over 100,000 illegal aliens from Africa to flood into South Tel Aviv and cause crime and rape and murder and everything else there. I mean, it's unbelievable. And by the way, on that issue, what we're saying is very popular. That a lot of Israelis like our message on that, when we say they should all be thrown out. On that issue, we're popular. And on some of the other issues, and some of the stands we take, by the way, do have wide support among Israeli Jews. What we say about Trump is not popular, that's true. But what we say on, he's not the central figure. Don't forget, Trump is something American Jews focus on because he's the president of the United States. In Israel, when we focus on Israeli political, on the Israeli dynamics of Israeli politics and Israeli political competition, many of the positions we take, even though they're not represented by the politicians in Israel, because politicians in Israel are not allowed to say these things, but many, many average Israelis agree with what we're saying. They'd like to get the Arabs out. Of course, most Israelis would love to do that. Most Israelis would love to expel all the illegal aliens from Africa and elsewhere and flooding in and destroying their cities. Most Israelis agree that Jews should be allowed to move anywhere in the land of Israel. So our positions are popular. Many of our key positions are very popular. It's a question of how many people we can reach. And in many ways, that depends on us. We, the JTFers. We got to spread the word and strengthen our movement, and we need your financial support. The more financial support we get, the more people we reach in Eretz Yisrael. If we fight together as a team, we can still make this a better world. We're fighting to do that. We're fighting to do that in the land of Israel. If you understand the importance of that, the extreme importance of that, help us. Help us so that we can wake people up before it's too late. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.